from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, the House of Delegates approves a controversial gun bill, one similar to a piece of legislation Governor Tomlin vetoed in 2015. A special report tonight from the West Virginia Division of Tourism and what they've done with the $4 million lawmakers committed to a new advertising campaign. And Secretary of State Natalie Tennant joins us to discuss the progress of the state's public campaign financing program and a proposal to increase campaign contributions in the middle of an election cycle. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Members of the House once again held a marathon floor session debating a bill supporters say protects the constitutional rights of their constituents. The bill would allow West Virginians of a certain age to carry a concealed weapon without a permit. Many Democrats expressed safety concerns over the measure and attempted to amend the bill on its third reading. Liz McCormick has a recap of that floor session, including the final vote.
House Bill 4145 was up for passage today, but with 12 pending amendments. But first, what does this bill do? It allows West Virginians between 18 and 21 to be eligible for a concealed carry permit. After 21, that person would not need a permit to carry a concealed handgun or other deadly weapon. One of the 12 amendments suggested came from House Judiciary Chairman John Schott of Mercer County. His amendment would give a tax credit of up to $100 to anyone in the state who still goes through the permitting process. That amendment was approved. The remaining 11 amendments were debated for roughly 2 hours. One of them related to keeping training requirements before concealing a deadly weapon. Another suggested that only residents of West Virginia could carry a concealed weapon without a permit. And another suggested those who carry a handgun or deadly weapon pay insurance for those weapons. All of the amendments failed, except for one that would exempt probation officers from the list of those who could carry guns onto school grounds. After amendments, members of both sides debated the bill.
But I appeal to your sense of logic. If I am in a crowded setting, and after this bill passes, I have to assume that everybody in that setting has a gun. Now, people will say you probably should do that anyway. But this country wasn't based on fear of one another, on this irrational, lunatic assumption that everybody's out to kill everybody else. But after this bill passes in West Virginia, I have to assume that that guy that sticks his hand in his pocket when we're arguing the debate is going to pull a gun and shoot me, and I'm going to beat him to it, Dodge City style. We cannot assume that the public is in such fear of its life that it has to be given the opportunity to end someone else's. Because when we do that, we're accelerating the destruction of this society as we know it.
When in the world, in this 60-day session, do we get to the point where we actually enact some laws that the public wants? So what are you going to do? Go back and say to your coach, okay, you got your hat, got your whistle, got your gun, let's go officiate this game. What are you going to do? Grab the picnic basket, honey. Grab your gun. Let's take the kids out in the woods and hope that there's not somebody else there with a gun. I think this goes too far. I think we need to protect our public square.
Something happened to me over the course of the year that solidified my belief in the importance of this bill. Last November, I went home. I read to preschoolers on Thursdays. And I went home and I walked in on an intruder. And it was genuinely one of the most terrifying situations that I have ever found myself in. And for a solid 6 seconds, I questioned what I needed to do. Should I go outside? Do I call the police? What do I do? And I realized that I'm not going to let some man scare me out of my home. And I immediately grabbed my gun. And as soon as I grabbed my gun, I felt confident. I knew that I was able to protect myself in that situation. That if that man attacked me, I could stop him by putting a bullet in his chest cavity. I knew that I was on equal footing with this man. It's no secret that women are physically weaker than men. And just like my friend from the 51st said, this gives us the ability. This is a great equalizer for women.
Who would this bill affect? Well, first and foremost, me. I'm the only person standing in this chamber in the 18 to 21-year-old age period. I can currently not get a permit to carry. And I'll tell you right now, I am scared. I've received multiple death threats in the past year. I am scared. I've always been scared. I'm not going to stop what I do on the daily basis. I'm not going to stop going to the mall. I'm not going to stop going to the movies. And I'm not going to stop going to church because of it. But I would feel safer as a law-abiding citizen if I knew that I was able to protect myself.
House Bill 4145 passed 68 to 31 and now goes to the Senate for its consideration. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Members of the Republican majority in the Senate are continuing their focus on social issues. Tomorrow, members of the chamber will vote on a bill to drug test some West Virginians who receive public assistance. Senate Bill 6 creates a three-year pilot program to drug test recipients of TANF benefits. TANF stands for Temporary Assistance for Needy Families and is designed to provide temporary relief for working families who struggle to make ends meet. Senator Ryan Ferns is the lead sponsor of the bill. He says it requires employees of the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources prove reasonable suspicion before drug testing a TANF recipient.
So they do that through two ways. One is if the person has been convicted of a drug-related offense in the last 5 years, and the other is through a screening process, which they already have in place. And if the person, if in that screening process there's indications that they may be using drugs, then they would qualify to be drug tested.
Fern says the program would operate on a three-strike system. After one failed drug test, a recipient would not lose their benefits, but would be required to enter into rehabilitative and workforce training programs. After a second failed test, the person would lose their benefits for either 12 months or until they complete one of those training or rehabilitation programs. After a third failed test, the West Virginian would lose eligibility for TANF benefits for life. Benefits, however, will not be taken from dependent children in the home. Fern says the bill requires the DHHR find another qualified adult in their lives to take over distribution of child benefits, something he says the state already does in other cases.
The drug epidemic has been increasingly harmful to our state. It's getting worse and worse all the time, and we are looking at any possible way that we can assist individuals who need help and get them help. And so we really look at this as a compassionate means for identifying individuals who are drug addicts and then getting them into help and giving them an incentive to get help.
Those opposed to the bill maintain the screening process will allow for discrimination against minority and low-income West Virginians. The DHHR estimates the program will cost the state about $50,000 for its initial implementation and about $22,000 each year after. Senators will vote on Senate Bill 6 Tuesday. Members of the Senate Judiciary Committee took up a bill this afternoon to increase the donor contribution limits in West Virginia elections from the current $1,000 cap per election to $2,700, the federal contribution limit. The chamber worked on a similar bill for weeks last session, which included provisions to keep so-called dark money out of West Virginia races, money that typically comes from out-of-state interest groups and cannot be tracked. Joining us this evening to discuss that bill and others that will ultimately affect her office is the state's chief election officer, Secretary of State Natalie Tennant. Secretary, thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So let's start with this bill. The way I understand it, it would increase those limits on May 11th, the day after the state's primary election this year. What does that mean for your office if those limits change in the middle of an election cycle?
Well, on the practical purpose, it would affect our office because we have a campaign finance reporting system that already has in place a limit of $1,000 that if someone puts in, $2,700, it would not accept it. And so obviously right off the bat, we would have to change our system. And as a matter of fact, because you would be still reporting from your primary contributions, it would make it difficult to, you would almost in a sense have parallel systems that would be prepared to report. And so that would make it somewhat difficult in the reporting purposes. You know, and especially during an election cycle, you're changing the rules in midstream. And, you know, what happens, what does that mean when you're in the middle of a game and you're changing the rules? That, you know, are you playing fairly or is this the proper approach to go about this? And so, you know, I understand where folks are coming from in wanting to make it equal to the federal limit, but I'm not sure that you should do it in midstream. And quite frankly, for me personally, I think there's already too much money in campaigns.
Well, you followed this bill closely, a similar version of this bill closely last year. Has the Senate reached out to you? Have they asked you to come share your thoughts on the changes in this bill?
We work closely from a Secretary of State standpoint, from an office standpoint. And so the legislative liaison in the Secretary of State's office, Dave Nichols, works hand in hand. He is, and especially it's in Senate Judiciary with Chairman Trump. And we have a very good working relationship with Senator Trump. And we certainly express our concerns. And that is a concern there, is how do you, a clear up from now until May 10th, you have one type of reporting. And then from May 10th on, what are you going to do after that? And is that going, it's obviously causing a change in elections. And what's that going to do with having a campaign finance reporting system that has to be changed? And then there goes, you know, what kind of transparency? We are about transparency in the Secretary of State's office. But how do you make that as seamless as possible when you're changing the rules in midstream?
So if we can move kind of to the opposite end of the spectrum and talk about public dollars, the state implemented in 2012 a program to allow for the public campaign financing of Supreme Court officials, people running for Supreme Court. And so far there are two candidates this year who are attempting to get those dollars. Can you talk to us about the threshold? Not just anybody can say, I want to run for Supreme Court and I want that $500,000 from the state.
Give me money. Exactly. And in this case, it's $525,000. But a candidate is not going to get that because candidates have a requirement. Just as you said, they can't say, here, I'm going to run. A candidate has to meet qualifying standards, and that is getting contributions, getting 500 contributions from around the state, from the three different
congressional districts,
from the three different congressional districts, and it can only be up to $100. So they are getting contributions from $1 clear up to $100, and they cannot get any more than $50,000 worth. So then that $50,000, if they reach that threshold, they get that $50,000. So chances are they're going to get the $475,000 from the public financing program that is in place in West Virginia.
So your office in the past week, your office is part of the State Election Commission. We should say that first.
Correct.
And over the past week, the State Election Commission has been dealing with challenges to these contributions. Can you tell us about what you all have been doing?
Sure. The State Election Commission is made up of two Republicans and two Democrats and then the Secretary of State, whichever party he or she is a member of. And so as that, the Secretary of State is a member. And the SEC, State Election Commission, oversees the public financing program for our Supreme Court justices. And as you all have reported, we have two candidates, Brent Benjamin and Bill Wooten, who have enacted or collected these contributions that they have to meet. Well, another candidate, Beth Walker, is challenging and has challenged the contributions or the submissions of these candidates. And so we met for 3 days in a row. And the first day she challenged Brent Benjamin's 155 submissions. And we accepted 135, or I guess we should say we denied her challenge on 135. So they had 135. Then the next day, she challenged 365 of his submissions. So essentially, she challenged all of his submissions. And on the second day, we denied that challenge and approved all 365. So then the certification period takes place. That was on our third day of meetings. We have certified the submissions of Bill Wooten, and we'll be meeting on Wednesday, February 10th, to evaluate again Brent Benjamin's.
So, Secretary, I'd like to ask you quickly to touch on something that is good about your office, something that you all...
Everything is good about
well,
our office.
Well, that's true,
Ashton.
But not the controversy, on something that you all have accomplished in the past year, and that's the online voter registration.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that program
well,
and what you guys are
obviously
doing?
Obviously, 2016 is a very big year, especially in elections. And, yes, we have had many accomplishments in the Secretary of State's office, but online voter registration is exactly that. It makes it easier for people to get registered. If you have a driver's license or a state ID number, you can go on our website, input that number, your last four digits of your Social Security number, and get registered to vote. And we're finding in the first 4 months of this, we have more than 5,600 people who have engaged in it. Much of it is those who want to change their name, need to change their address or party affiliation, and then about 40% of those numbers are folks who are getting new voter registration. So that is just one of the many initiatives and technology that we have from the Secretary of State's office that makes doing business, that makes getting registered to vote and really being an active citizen in the state that we have in our office.
Secretary of State Natalie Tennant, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Now a look at representatives from Southern West Virginia in this edition of Meet Your Lawmaker.
Ed Gonch was elected to the state Senate in 2014. He's a Republican from Kanawha County representing the 8th Senatorial District. Senator Gonch chairs the committees on interstate cooperation and pensions and serves as the vice chair of the Committee on Banking and Insurance. Joe Ellington is a Republican from Mercer County. He represents the state's 27th House of Delegates District. Delegate Ellington was elected in 2010. Ellington serves as the chair of the House Health Committee. Marty Gerhart represents the state's 27th House of Delegates District. A Republican, he's from Mercer County. Delegate Gerhart was elected in 2010 and serves as the chair of the House Committee on Roads and Transportation. John Schott is a Republican from Mercer County. He was elected to the House in 2008, was appointed to the Senate in 2010, and won re-election to the House in 2012. Schott serves as the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee.
The Courtesy Patrol is a state-run program that has trucks traveling West Virginia interstates and highways looking for distressed motorists. Last year, lawmakers moved the program from the Division of Tourism to the Department of Highways, but left its $4 million of funding behind. Rob Engel joins us to discuss what exactly the Division of Tourism has used those extra dollars for.
Ashton, after these lawmakers essentially appropriated an extra $4 million, to the Division of Tourism last year, the agency took on a major advertising campaign focusing on bringing more visitors and tax dollars to the state. Today, I spoke with West Virginia Tourism Commissioner, who says while the division doesn't have any final numbers on the campaign's success, she believes it's working.
People are very excited about things that are handmade and locally made here. People want to hang on to their own culture.
We are wild and wonderful down here.
While many state agencies were enduring cuts during the 2015 legislative session, the Division of Tourism actually saw an increase of about $4 million. That money, however, was dedicated to creating and implementing a tourism marketing campaign. Amy Goodwin is West Virginia's Commissioner for Tourism.
The new campaign is called Real Wild Wonderful West Virginia.
Goodwin explains the campaign is focused on attracting a specific demographic to West Virginia, a younger, more vibrant group focused on exploring and experiencing, millennials.
We know that millennials are the fastest growing demographic in the travel and tourism industry. And what they want are things that are real. They want craft beer. They are farm to table. They grew up wanting experiences and not things. And so we're really honing in. We're really looking towards that demographic.
Millennials have an estimated $200 billion annual buying power. But Goodwin says the state has to rethink how they're reaching that group.
As the Division of Tourism increasingly targets millennials, they developed a new, more tech-savvy way to get young people to explore all these different great things the state has to offer. And that is the Go To West Virginia app. Users of this app are able to plan trips, research events, and even explore sites all across the state of West Virginia.
You can look at all of the wonderful things that we have in the state. You can create your own agenda of where you want to go, your favorite spots, and you can learn a little bit more right in the palm of your hand, because this is what we know. It's mobile. People are mobile, and they want that information right this second.
And the Division of Tourism isn't just considering mobility in the technological sense, but also how to get people mobile, making West Virginia appealing to out-of-state tourists.
Our meat and potato markets are Pittsburgh, Columbus, Charlotte, Roanoke. So think of those states that are right beside us that we would get a traveler to come for 1 or 2 days. So our commercials have run in those areas. We take out a lot of marketing pieces and publications that focus on particular areas of interest: biking, whitewater rafting, hiking, culinary arts.
Outside the state, the bread and butter of West Virginia tourism lies in its many outdoor sporting and recreational activities.
No other state can beat us on hiking, biking, backpacking, whitewater rafting, fishing, camping. And so we're really taking great opportunities right now with our marketing and advertising to show those real experiences. But on the other hand, people aren't coming to West Virginia to do one thing. So with our marketing and advertising, we're also doing a layered approach. So it's not just whitewater rafting. It's whitewater rafting and then dinner, maybe hitting up a craft beer facility, going to see a show, going to see mountain stage.
Because the Real West Virginia campaign is ongoing, there aren't yet any hard numbers on the campaign's impact. However, according to the 2014 Accountability and Image Study conducted by Longwood International, previous marketing campaigns for West Virginia tourism have a return on investment of 7 to 1.
Make no mistake about it. While you look at these posters and you look at all these brochures, we look like we're the fun people in West Virginia, but we're the money people. We employ 46,000 people throughout the state of West Virginia, and we bring in $5.1 billion to the state of West Virginia. So we're a serious player. The best thing that we can continue to do, not only just to invest, but make smart investments and keep up with technology and keep up with social media and keep up with promoting the great image of everything that we have here in wild, wonderful West Virginia.
While Governor Tomlin has proposed yet another budget cut for state agencies, including tourism, Goodwin says she'll continue to work with lawmakers to educate them on the dollars her agency brings to the state.
Those hoping to keep up with what's going on in the state can download the GoTo West Virginia app for free on their Apple devices. For the Legislature Today, I'm Rob Engel.
Thanks, Rob. Tomorrow on our show, State Auditor Glenn Gaynor will join us to discuss the implementation of a state computer operating system causing some trouble for public employees and possibly costing taxpayers more than expected. Auditor Glenn Gaynor discusses West Virginia OASIS tomorrow. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.